And that sound means that everything is going to be okay, because Scott Washington joins us in the studio for another round of History Matters, taking a look at this week in history. We do always have a tendency to have these conversations on really historic days, don't we?
Yeah, so.
Taking place in Washington right now on a tax bill, which may or may not pass.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very well. We've commented on this many times that
yeah.
we think, oh yes, let's have a bucolic conversation about history,
yeah.
and instead we're constantly being surprised by the history that's taking place right in front of our eyes.
Absolutely,
every day, and
yeah.
which sometimes
and
is
we're
dazzling.
Following the things that are just sort of front and center. Like
yes.
there's a vote taking place on the floor of the U.S. Senate right now, where there are votes being
right.
you know, like the Votorama still yet to come and everything else. But so we're following that, but we were talking before during the break. I'm reading this book on 19th century mm-hmm. American history by Sean Wilentz, which is a terrific book, The Rise of American Democracy. It's big, it's dense, it's fascinating. It'll take you forever to finish. It's 800 pages long, but you'll learn a lot.
But you were saying you couldn't even answer your email because you're
oh yeah,
just,
no,
you're
my
so
email
fascinated.
Inbox is
oh,
just
my God.
Blowing up.
I
all
think
the,
that's a really
yeah.
strong
yeah.
endorsement for this.
Yeah, I've got no, it's
the
a
Rise
terrific
of American
book.
Democracy.
But
that's
one of the really
great.
Fascinating things and about this book, among other things, is that a lot of the really significant historical things that historians mm-hmm. will look back on 200 years later, like, oh, what was the significant event of 2017? It's not necessarily going to be anything that we're currently
right.
aware of.
Yeah.
Which is just fascinating to me.
It is. Well, the things
yeah.
that we think are important,
yeah.
and it's something else entirely.
Yep. Yep.
That in the longer scheme, the larger arc of history, mm-hmm. that becomes significant. Not the other stuff, which is
yep.
Which generates a lot
about,
of emotion.
Yeah. We're talking about like Andrew Jackson, for instance.
Yes.
So this is a book about the rise of democracy in the early 19th century. So there's
okay.
a real heavy focus on Andrew Jackson. And talking
this is the
about
guy in the $20 bill.
Guy in right, the $20 yes. bill for now.
yes, that's right.
Yeah, but, but, you know, when we look back at his presidency today, the great sin of Jackson's presidency, from our perspective,
yes.
is the removal of Indians to
yes.
Oklahoma, which was significant. It was racist. It was deadly. Like, it was a really, really nasty thing. From the perspective of 1832, when the mm-hmm. debate is currently going on, that does kind of enter into people's minds, but it's
right.
not the most significant thing that people thought of at the time. When the 1832
right.
elections are happening, that's not the number one issue on
no.
the agenda, but it is to us today. We look back and we see that.
And yet it comes up again this week
mm-hmm.
because of the honoring of the Code Talkers.
Yes.
And there they stand beneath a
portrait
of Jackson, which
yeah.
I don't think was unintentional. But it brings about the same kind of discussion about Jackson's role.
Yep.
And so inadvertently, we're also revisiting some important history.
Yeah.
Just like with the Confederate monuments, we're revisiting and saying, well, wait a minute now, this is a little bit different
yeah.
than we think. It's not the Jackson of the Battle of New Orleans who
mm-hmm.
defeats the British, but this is Jackson, a part of his character that we are still troubled with.
Yep.
And so I think that's, yeah, this is a fascinating part of history and why we keep studying it, because we look back and we go, oh my gosh,
yeah.
This has never happened before. And then we look and we go, oh yes, it has.
Yeah, yeah. And actually brought that up, not even thinking about the Code Talkers from just
yeah.
a couple of days ago. It's incredible how just all of this connects
yes.
and comes full circle every
that's
single
right.
time. Yeah.
And well, a couple things happened this week in relation to this that,
mm-hmm.
that stood out. One was, let's see, on November 30th, 1952, is when a Cherokee from here in North Carolina, Charles George, died at the age of 20 in Korea. Now,
mm-hmm.
Korea has also been big in the news. This is during the Korean War. He was a private and sustained injuries when he threw himself on a grenade to shield his comrades.
Mm-hmm.
And as he died as a result of that, but as a result of his bravery, he was awarded the Medal of Honor, and I think that's important to know that's part of his heritage, including the Code Talkers, who, because they could talk in their native language, the Germans could not decipher what
mm-hmm.
they were saying, and that saved American lives. Very important, and I'm sorry that it was not better understood, but maybe a lot of people took another look at exactly what was going on as a result of the controversy this week.
Hopefully. Yeah.
So,
which means probably not.
Probably,
but, you know,
yeah.
I tell when I were teaching teaching Durham, teaching my American government class at Durham Tech, we're talking about participation and getting involved in a political issue. And this, you know, kind of the sad thing, and it's frustrating, but it's just sort of a reality that we have to deal with, is that people, especially on issues where our opinions are entrenched and they're sort of fundamental to who we are and our worldviews, are very unwilling to change our minds, even when confronted with facts that directly contradict whatever it is that we're thinking. But what that means is, if you're passionate about an issue and you go and you speak in front of 100 people, you might only change one mind out of 100. And that's going to be real frustrating, because you're going to think of that and think, oh, I failed. Like, this was a 99% failure. But honestly, that's success.
That's
you change one mind in a room full of 100. You keep doing that, you're good.
Well, don't you find it really interesting over the past year how many more people have gotten involved in doing things as a result of the outcome of the election that changed everything? And suddenly people who are thinking complacently, oh, well, and now have suddenly realized, no, they need to be engaged and to speak out. And I think that's a very good outcome, and an unexpected one, of an engaged electorate happening in our country. And speaking of engaged electorate, well, here's one that didn't work out.
I don't know where you're going with this.
I know. happens on November 28th, 1785. Now we have to go back in time a little bit.
Yes. Okay.
This is when Congress turns down the appeal of folks out in what is today Tennessee, the eastern part of Tennessee, the state of Franklin to be declared a state. It did not get the necessary two-thirds majority, and so the land reverted back to technically North Carolina, also the Cherokee, and that was probably the best thing that came out of that brief point. And just to kind of put it in context, prior to this, North Carolina's boundaries kind of extended indefinitely past the mountains all the way to the Mississippi. And people obviously past the mountains there did not feel well represented, and so they established the state of Franklin. Also, it helped that there was a real need to deal with the Cherokee, and there were settlers coming into that area. They negotiated a successful peace treaty with the Cherokee. Settlers came in, and then they tried to apply for a statehood, and the Congress said, well, tell us more. And it turns out they didn't even have currency. They only traded in hides. And Congress said no. Ben Franklin didn't want anything a part of that.
Right.
So, but John Sevier, who was the governor of this fledgling little state, gets kind of slapped on the wrist. The land reverts to North Carolina. Then North Carolina cedes this land to the federal government, which turns around, creates a state of Tennessee, and the first governor is John Sevier.
So eventually this does kind of come to pass in a different way. So let me ask you the counterfactual question, because we've talked about the state of Franklin before. This is 1785. Yeah. It's 2 years before the writing of the Constitution.
Right.
In North Carolina, there was obviously consternation over ratification.
Yes.
There was a lot of debate. We ended up putting it off. Where was the strongest support versus opposition for the Constitution in North Carolina? I'm asking because if it was in 1787 and you needed 10 out of 14 states to pass as opposed to 9 out of 13, how would that have changed things?
Yeah. Well, in terms of within North Carolina, you would find the most support was towards the eastern part of the state.
Okay.
Now, there was no Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill.
Right.
In fact,
but like
that,
the further west you go, the more kind of suspicion there was.
Well, this was long-standing. Mm-hmm. So there were, and certainly Orange County involved with the Regulator movement.
Yes.
Questioning colonial authority. There was still concern, and even the way that the Constitutional Convention is framed. Where you had the people who were the Federalists, let's have the Constitution, and this was nationwide. But then they framed the people who were raising questions as anti-Federalists.
Federalists, yes.
Now, that's not really It's not like today where you're the anti-government people. This was really, they were, I would call them more skeptics,
right,
saying, well, you know, prove it to me. Let's tell me why this is any better over what we have.
Yeah, that was very much a political move to hang that word on the opponents of the Constitution.
And then the anti-federal were put on the defensive of trying to say, no, no, we're not against it, and having to...
And then they're just the party of no, you know? Yeah. What are you in favor of?
That's right.
Come on, propose something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no and yes has, are very important words to have in any lexicon. But
It also would have been interesting because North Carolina sent a certain number of delegates to every state minus Rhode Island sent delegates. But Rhode Island had the opportunity to, and presumably the state of Franklin would have as well. So those the group of 55 that were in Philadelphia to write the Constitution, the makeup of that group would have been slightly different if there had been three different people from the state of Franklin.
Yeah, that might have changed things too. In this case, North Carolina, and when they said we're going to have 9 of 13, the new U.S. Constitution will go into effect, wonderful. But nobody really thought, well, what happens if those other states don't
Right.
And so North Carolina, when they voted to postpone ratifying the Constitution until provisions were made for introducing a Bill of Rights to Congress and the ratifying states, people don't know. Is it that they reject it? Did they? And so luckily, Hugh Williamson, who was one of the people who signed the Constitution, was up in New York just pouring oil on water to say, no, 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 reassuring people it's okay. But, you know, Franklin wasn't the only time that attempts were made to make a state. Another one came out of Hillsboro. Judge Henderson was head of the Transylvania Company and hired Daniel Boone. And if you've ever been to Hillsboro, the Daniel Boone Village is in honor of that. But actually to open up part of Kentucky. And they wanted to have a state called Transylvania. And again, Congress wisely said, no, I
don't
think
so. Come up with a better name.
They even had the lock on Halloween. So Franklin, if you want to know where Franklin is, it's about in the area where Dollywood is today. So in that same area. Also, where you find Kodak, Tennessee, so named after a Kodak box that somebody found, and they could have a name the post office. So they said, well, what about Kodak? And back in the 1888, 1890, the U.S. Congress said, okay, that sounds good. So still has a post office box there,
Kodak.
A post office.
Oh, interesting.
Called Kodak, Tennessee.
Considering all the things that got sent in the mail at the time, and they could have done a lot worse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, there's a couple of really important things that do happen in addition on this week. On Friday, December 1st, is a couple of really important things. One, it is World AIDS Day, and designated every year since 1988. And, you know, it's amazing. We think, oh, well, haven't we solved this? No.
No.
And it's still claiming lives worldwide. And that's still an important day to mark the improvement of treatment, but to also say this is a virus. And, you know, it's nothing about lifestyles. It's a virus. And we need to be aware of that. The other one is, of course, December 1st, 1955 is when
Rosa Parks
refused to give up her bus seat and sparks, of course, the boycott in Montgomery of the buses. And that's an incredibly important. Here's that, you know, we always talk about standing up for something. And here's a person who sat down after a long day and refused to move when asked to, and endures a $10 fine, but that spurs a young preacher, Martin Luther King, to take steps along with other leaders and a successful boycott.
Martin Luther King, who on this week in 1962, Monday the 27th, gave a speech in Rocky Mount that includes the line, "I have a dream," one of the first times he's recorded have used that line prior to the speech in 63.
You know, I had not realized all the connections. Of course, Martin Luther King was in Chapel Hill and Durham, and certainly he was in Rocky Mount on November 27th, 1962, and he uses some of these same lines that a year later in August of 63, we hear on the steps of the Capitol. And that's just, you know, that's part of this. It's a great history that we get excited about because there are people standing up for principled places. And just when you think you're getting cynical about what you're hearing in the news, trust me, there are really great moments and great people that step forward and are torchbearers that light the way.
Absolutely. Speaking with Scott Washington, Scott, we got time for one more big one from this week.
Oh.
What's your favorite?
Oh, gosh. Here's one. December 3rd. This one is takes several hundred years. It's literally December 3rd, 1679.
Oh, yes.
Carolina,
I like this one, yeah.
Passes a law directing local juries to investigate felonies, witchcrafts, enchantments, sorceries, and magic arts, among other crimes. Now, unlike Salem, Massachusetts, where people actually died, people were accused, but oftentimes these cases were dropped.
Mm.
But still, it's amazing that this is still on the books, and a case was considered as late as 1976, and finally the law was repealed in 2004. Thankfully, but you know, that's just an amazing thing to think about. We think of freedom of religion and the Wicca group, which is fairly peace-loving and not into anything terrible, but that this was still considered something that was on the North Carolina books for so long.
Until 2004. And there was a potential trial in 1976. And what bizarreness would have led to someone being potentially tried for witchcraft in 1976?
Change does come. And that's the thing when you read about history. It may take a while, but it does come. And sometimes we don't wait. We get on the streets, and sometimes we put feet to pavement, and that works too.
Absolutely. Well, that is History Matters for this week. Scott Washington, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.